Higher Human Performance, the podcast, episode 279. Welcome inside the Yellow Studio. Dallas, Fort Worth, Texas is where I'm coming from. My name is Randy Cantrell, your host here at Higher Human Performance, the podcast. You can find the show notes at higherhumanperformance.com. Today is episode 279. Just plug that number in the search bar. It will take you right there. And I've got to tell you, there's about a four-minute video you're going to want to watch. No, it's not a video of me, but it's a video that I'm going to talk about in the show today. Later on. Today, it's about embracing the gray, taking leadership a step closer toward truth. Digital technology introduced even non-mathematicians and engineers to the term binary. I think I first heard that term in college, in a math or an engineering class. Yeah, but, you know, that was back in the Stone Ages. Ones or zeros. On or off. Black or white. I mean, these are kinds of the terms of the binary world. In 1987, Jeremy Rifkin, he wrote a book entitled Time Wars. It's one of those books that I have hung on to and I have reread through the years. And while it is a little bit dated now, there's some concepts in it that I just found very fascinating at the time. 1987 just seems like worlds ago. In that book, though, Jeremy Rifkin observed the difference in digital watches and analog watches and the impact that that has on our sense of time. It's really bigger than that, though, because it speaks to the black and white nature of digital versus all the various shades of gray that are apparent in the analog domain. Now, I have on my wrist right now, I have on a Timex Ironman, a digital watch. That is, it's not the traditional analog clock with an hour, minute, and second hand. No, I stare at my watch or I stare at my cell phone, my iPhone. I see the current time. I see that right now it is 3:35. I do have a second counter, so I do see that on my wristwatch. But I've got no concept, based on looking at this digital watch, I've got no concept of the past. I really don't have any concept of the future, because what I'm seeing digitally is now, now, now. I mean, we're always just always now. It's just the current time. That's it. Nothing more. But you look at clocks, and I've got some around me that have hands, hour hands and minute hands, and some have second hands. And by looking at that face on the clock, it's 3:35 and I'm staring ahead on a wall at an analog clock, and I can see, that we're some minutes past 3:30. So I can see the past. I can see what 4 o'clock's going to look like. We're about 20 minutes away from it, but it's analog. Now, unfortunately, executives can be prone to approach leadership in exactly the same way as that digital clock, black and white, absent of any shades of gray. And the reality is our organizations and our leadership, it's filled with all kinds of gray, lots and lots of gray. And if we refuse to fail to see it, acknowledge it, and lead comfortably in it, that is the gray, then we're just going to fail to be the evidence-based leaders capable of pushing our organizations higher. And if you've been keeping up, you know that episode 280, the very next episode, if all goes according to plan, is going to be about evidence-based leadership. When you're a hammer, every problem is a nail. And sadly, that's how some leaders lead. One size force fits all. That's right. We force fit it. They are the way they are, and it's incumbent on the troops to adjust. I lead the way I lead. It's up to y'all to make an adjustment. I say what I say. It's up to you guys to figure it out. And it's just how some leaders view things. But it's also how they choose to respond to a thing. It's how they choose to respond to people, how they choose to respond to situations and circumstances and opportunities. Leaders with an elevated ability to embrace the gray have learned to adapt to what they believe is most warranted at the time. Sometimes it requires a stylistic change. All you got to do is watch a leader hold forth with a small group of upper executives and pay close attention to the language. Watch the body language. Pay attention to the degree of candor in the room. Now, watch that same leader deliver a message to the troops, not just his inner circle. Well, it's a very different performance. And the reason is the stage is different. The audience is different. In fact, it requires a change. Great leaders recognize their responsibility to provide the right fit at the right time and know who's in the room and what's the circumstance here. It's a big part of seeing and managing the gray. Embracing the gray isn't merely stylistic, though. Now, problem solving is another area where effective leaders can understand the benefits of seeing the gray. Some of the better solutions are born from investigating the possibilities that we may not have initially gravitated toward. In fact, we may not have even considered them at all. Embracing the gray is refraining from drawing a quick conclusion until you have sufficient evidence. I'll give you a warning. It can be a whole lot tougher than it sounds. Know if you're a hammer or any other tool for that matter. Because you can have any kind of other tool that just can't perform multiple tasks, the multiple tasks that are required of you as a leader. Leaders who embrace the gray, they have learned to be kind of the Swiss Army knife in assessing and problem solving and opportunity seeking. Sometimes you need a screwdriver, other times you need pliers, sometimes you need tweezers. It requires training yourself to be patient, to be open-minded, to be receptive to the possibilities or the ideas, as opposed to just living your life looking at everything like it's a nail and you are the hammer. Patience, silence, contemplation, investigation, verification. I mean, these are just a few of the things that you're going to need in order to embrace the gray. The goal isn't to brag about how into the gray you can be. It's about being smarter, being wiser, and making better decisions. It's about drawing the correct conclusion while avoiding the inaccurate knee-jerk reaction. Because who wants to get it wrong? And it's not because you're afraid of being wrong. No, that ain't it. But it's because getting it right best serves your people. Getting it right best serves your organization. That's the objective. Let's talk about the problems of being binary. He wears his idealism on his sleeve and it makes him very judgmental. That's what a senior executive told me one time, talking about one of his direct reports. We'll call him Bernard. We changed the names to protect the guilty. Well, he goes on to talk about all the times that this mid-level manager, Bernard, has created problems because he just refuses to see any gray. Bernard sees right or wrong, good or evil, crooked or straight, no middle ground ever. And the boss, his boss, is vexed by this. In fact, he's almost out of his mind about what to do. And that's why he's talking to me. The boss describes Bernard as this guy with such a high degree of self-righteousness that, well, people don't want to work with him. In fact, people can't stand Bernard anymore. And the boss has only tolerated Bernard up to this point because his work product, top-notch. Top-notch. But these people issues, man, these people issues, they're beginning to cripple things, and that ain't good. And so the boss is now looking for some input on what might be done to help Bernard. And as much as I'm sitting here listening to this and wanting to offer this boss some hope, the big challenge is whether or not the organization wants to devote the time, the effort, the energy, and the money to fix Bernard. It might not be the wisest use of resources if the boss has already spent considerable time, and we're talking years. Bernard's not a new employee. Years of trying to coach Bernard, of trying to get Bernard to see the possibility of gray. I mean, these aren't the decisions that I make. Not anymore. I'm not paid to make these decisions anymore. Not as a coach, not as a consultant. My job is to serve the leader who hires me. But I'm still prone to urge any investment. Yeah, let's at least be wise about it. Let's at least make an investment in what is not a lost cause. I don't know if Bernard's a lost cause. That's for other people to decide. I do tell this executive that it sounds to me like he already knows what he needs to do. He's already spent years and years trying everything that he knows to do to, as he puts it, to get Bernard to see things differently. Well, Bernard's not seeing things differently. Bernard's binary. Altering how people see the world and how they see others is a very hard thing to do. Well, when you're Bernard, or when you're like Bernard, it's just how Bernard sees things. It's how he sees all things, all the time. And besides, he has proven resistant to change, even in the face of constant coaching from his boss. Now, that kind of binary behavior foils career progress of even high performers like Bernard. He is shooting himself in the head, and he doesn't even know it. Well, Bernard suffers a common type of binary behavior. And in this particular instance, he has standards of ethical behavior that it just seems to him very few other people meet. That's just how Bernard rolls. He's harsh. He's judgmental. The slightest deviation from what he thinks is proper, what he thinks is right, what he thinks is ethical, he views those things as just low integrity issues. I mean, Bernard just can't seem to bring himself to just consider, forget conclude, just consider the possibility that people, they just don't always share his knowledge, his convictions, his worldview. Because people in Bernard's world, they are either right or they are wrong. There's no middle ground, ever. Well, now you can see how that kind of behavior is going to grow increasingly problematic for Bernard's boss and for Bernard's coworkers. And as a result, it's going to have a drastic impact on Bernard's career. Strife and tension just keep escalating and keep escalating. Bernard thought he was always right. The problem is everybody else. They're not right, but he is. And repeated efforts to help Bernard see the gray, they fail, and they fail again, and they fail again. Ultimately, Bernard is given a binary choice. Resign or be fired. Welcome to the world of being binary, Bernard. Everyone is ignorant in some way or another. A key to embracing the gray is to acknowledge our ignorance. And it can start with the mere confession that we might be ignorant about some things. Now, if you can start out with the sheer possibility, just the possibility of ignorance, then you can migrate, I think, to the reality that there are some things that you just are ignorant about. Sadly, people with a binary point of view, they refuse to even consider the possibility that they're wrong, i.e. Bernard. Now, ignorance is not stupidity. And I think people get that confused. Stupidity is defined as the behavior that shows a lack of good sense or judgment. Ignorance is a lack of knowledge or information. Well, those aren't even first cousins. You need to learn and you need to grow if you want to become a great leader. And that can't happen if you already think you know everything. If you think that you have no knowledge gaps, no ignorance, you're doomed already. But why should he be open-minded when he thinks he's right? It's a line that I came across from a kind of a science novella called The Human Script. But why should he be open-minded when he thinks he's right? Well, good question. Hello, Bernard. You can be right. You can be right much of the time. You might even be right most of the time, but you're not right all the time. None of us are. And the sooner you willingly acknowledge that with your team, well, with yourself, the better you're going to be, the better they're going to be. But the head trash, all that head trash, here's what the head trash is telling you. I'm the boss. I'm the boss. I have to be right. I can't afford to get it wrong. Well, that can really clutter up, you know, your nice, pretty head. Clichés fill our heads with notions of what we think leadership demands of us, namely an appearance of superiority. Never let them see you sweat. Never apologize. It's a sign of weakness. I mean, there's so many of these idiotic truisms. In preparation for episode 280, the one that I've got coming up, the one I've been promising you for a couple of episodes now about evidence-based leadership, in preparation for that, we need to get our leadership tiller out because the ground is really hard. The ground is really dry. This ground of ignorance, we got to get our power tiller out and we got to bust up this soil, because if we don't, then the seeds of evidence-based leadership, they're not going to be able to take root. Must I convince you? Do I really have to convince you that embracing grayscale in your leadership will benefit you and your team? I can do that. I can do that, but I can only do that if you value the truth, if you value accuracy, if you value making a positive difference in your organization. And surely you do. That's why you're listening. Let me give you three. I'm going to give you three big reasons. Big reasons why embracing the gray will make you a more effective leader. Reason number one, competence. Competence. Your own and the competence of your team hinges on your embracing the gray. Competence is defined as the ability to do something successfully or efficiently. Well, don't we all want that? Of course we do. We all want that. And we want that not only in our own lives, but we want that in our people. We want that throughout our organization, competence. You don't come to work every day trying to fail, do you? Of course you don't. Well, nobody else does either. Everybody wants to feel that they're making a positive difference. We all want to feel valued. And that's best accomplished with our performance. Now, Bernard proves that we also need to get along and we also need to have a reasonable degree of likability. But if our work product is poor, nothing else matters. I mean, it's kind of the barometer. It's kind of the minimum thing that we got to have going on, because even a guy like Bernard who has great work product wasn't enough to save him. Competence encompasses our skill, maybe even our natural aptitude, our opportunities, and our ability to seize those opportunities. If your leadership is binary, devoid of seeing any shades of gray, then you're not able to see skills. You're not able to see opportunities as clearly as you should. And the blinders that help you focus on just the black, just the white, just the binary, those same blinders, they prevent you from seeing other things, namely possibilities. Possibilities in yourself, possibilities in your people, possibilities in solutions, possibilities in opportunities. When I was in my 20s, I was running at the time a relatively new startup retailing company, a consumer electronics outfit. And I was an experienced commission sales guy and merchandiser. I had almost a decade of experience by this point, and I found myself needing some salespeople who were comfortable, number one, with being commission-based salespeople, and number two, who were comfortable educating shoppers in things that the shoppers didn't really have great familiarity with. Because with all the technology and consumer electronics, there were a lot of things that people just did not understand. Yeah, it was a different time. It was a long time ago. Dirt was young. So these were important to me as I was surveying the needs of the company, especially when it came to a sales staff. Technology was moving really fast. Home video was beginning to take off. The VCR was less than 10 years old. There was no digital technology. Portable video recording, that was beginning to be available by way of a big honking camera that had a huge cord that went down to a recorder that hung over your shoulder. Additionally, stereo television, that was hitting. And as a result, stereo hi-fi VCRs, yeah, that was beginning to be a big thing. Forehead VCRs, where you could actually freeze frame and fast forward and you could see the picture as you did that. Well, that was beginning to take root as well. Big screen TVs, they were gaining strength as well. And all of these things were really unfamiliar to most homes in America at the time. I needed salespeople capable of making those technologies more easily understood to shoppers. Well, where can I find such people? That was the quandary. That was the business problem. Now, a binary approach would have been to find experienced consumer electronics salespeople. But I did have a third consideration. And that was, in addition to commission-based compensation and people that were comfortable with that, and people that were capable of educating shoppers, I needed people who were also fanatical about customer experience and customer service. I already had experience with people who were familiar with the consumer electronics business, and quite frankly, at the time, most of them had some really bad habits that were very contradictory to the way we were running our organization. And I found myself constantly having to fix problems, basically having to break people from really bad habits. Well, I was ready to do something more positive. I got tired of doing that. And so I embraced my own level of gray. Now, at about this time, the bedding industry, the bedding industry, which I had zero experience at, they were having a new trend. Maybe it was even a fad. Turns out it was a fad. But it was something completely different than the traditional mattress, and so it required some salesmanship qualities that happened to be the very ones I was seeking. Waterbed stores. Waterbed stores were popping up all over the place. And so I went to a few of these to see how the salespeople would sell me, a guy who knew nothing about waterbeds. How would they sell me a waterbed? How would they educate me about how does a waterbed even work? I got no idea. Well, many of our shoppers, they wanted a big screen, but they had no idea how they worked or what to look for or what features might be important. Made sense to me at the time. And so I went shopping and listening, paying attention. And like every sales field, I found some salespeople that were very attentive to shoppers and very good at explaining this technology, and others that were apathetic. But I saw what I thought was a disproportionate number of excited, enthusiastic salespeople who had the right stuff, the stuff I was looking for. And so I recruited a few. They had no consumer electronics background. Instead of breaking bad habits, hired these people, and we had to teach them the terms, the technology of the products that we sold, because we weren't selling waterbeds. We were selling consumer electronics. But that was a very different activity than taking somebody who had a lot of bad habits and trying to break those habits. I mean, this was positive all the way around. There was nothing negative about any of this. Well, it was all brought about because we refused to be binary. I refused in my own leadership to be binary in my approach to building the business. Our competence as leaders and the competence of our sales team, it rose. And the reason it rose is because we realized that there might be a better solution to our people problem than the way that we had historically solved it by getting people that had experience in our industry. Now, it's not always about seeing if a round peg might fit into a square hole, which is kind of sort of what I was doing. It's really about opening your mind to look for patterns that might fit the problem you're trying to solve. You know, sometimes the dots, they don't connect from point A to B without first going through C and D. And having that flexibility, it will propel competence forward. Reason number two, it's attractive to your team. Nobody finds the knee-jerk leader attractive. They don't. You may think they do. They don't. They don't find the leader who flies by the seat of his pants attractive. Even knee-jerk reactors on your team, that is the people that behave that way themselves, they don't appreciate that trait in you. Mark it down. I'm telling you the truth. Talk to impulsive, talk to emotional people, and they'll tell you that they appreciate a leader who is deliberate, who's intentional, who's purposeful, but who takes the time to get it right. People don't want to follow leaders whose decisions are impacted. They don't want to follow leaders who just refuse to look and examine information, especially information that they provide. You remember in school, maybe you've had it happen even at work. You're asked to produce something and you don't even know if the teacher reads it or not. Countless workers do the same thing every day. They produce reports and they provide all kinds of data, and maybe they even provide interpretation of data, and they wonder, does anybody look at this thing? Because they get no feedback. They get no acknowledgement that anybody has even looked at all this work that they've produced. Yeah, people don't like that. Yeah, people don't like that. I mean, think about the times that you tried to present additional information to your boss, but you felt like it wasn't given any consideration. It's like it had no impact on anything at all. How'd that make you feel? People do not enjoy that feeling. No, they want to give information that they think is being given some consideration. And as a result, what does that do? Well, that fosters people to provide more information. Why? We all want to be valuable. We want to make a difference. We want our work to matter. Now, I know what you're saying. I don't care about being attractive to my people. What are you saying? Reason number two, because it's attractive to your team. I'm not interested in being attractive to my... Tap the brakes just a second, Hoss, on that thought. Because you should care. You absolutely should care about being attractive. If you don't like the word attractive, okay, pick another word. I'm sticking with attractive. Now, I think it's pompous to think that you don't want that. It's delusional even. You wanted to be attractive when you were dating. You wanted to be attractive when you got hired. You've spent a big part of your life wanting, needing to be attractive so that you could accomplish whatever it is you wanted to accomplish. So don't sit there and tell me now that you don't care about it. Sure you do. You care about it. See, there you go, being binary again. I'm not interested in being attractive. Certainly not to my people. I don't care. Every salesperson learns that people buy from friends or people who are friendly. I mean, it's that know, like, and trust stuff that you hear so much about. Trite, but true. Your leadership is greatly impacted by your ability to influence the people in your organization. And being unattractive, well, see how influential you are. See how persuasive you can be if you're not attractive. Doesn't work. Doesn't work. You can't accomplish the stuff you want to accomplish if you are unattractive. Flies and honey and all that. So stop resisting it. Stop telling yourself that it doesn't matter. It does matter. In fact, it matters a lot. Your attractiveness as a leader is greatly determined by your willingness to see and to appreciate shades of gray. And those shades are often shades that are provided by the input from your team. Try something for me. I dare you. I double dog dare you. You remember kids doing that? Like that mattered. Make a decision. I want you to make a decision before you gather any information from your team. Just sit down and figure out what it is you want to do. And the decision doesn't have to be big. It can be small. Doesn't matter. Then I want you to have a meeting with your team. And in that meeting with your team, I want you to explain to them the problem. And then I want you to tell them why you've called this meeting, that it's so that you can discuss the problem. But then I want you to tell them, but I've already decided what I'm going to do, and nothing you're going to say is going to change my mind. And then just shut up. Just sit back and just watch the room. Just watch all the air just rush right out from under the door, and watch all the switches in their head get flipped to off. You'll see it. I promise you, you'll see it. Just shut up and watch the room as you just watch every single person power down. Binary leadership does that. Binary leadership shuts people down. It shuts down their attraction to leaders. And leaders without followers or supporters are, well, they're just lone wolves out there waiting in the wild to be killed. Reason number three, embracing gray will foster your own personal growth and the growth of your entire team. Won't guarantee it, but it will foster it. I'll go you one better. If you remain a binary leader, you will not grow, and neither will your team. Mark it down. You must embrace the gray in order to grow, even though embracing it won't solely guarantee it, because it's just one, albeit a very important component in the equation. You only know what you know. I only know what I know. I mean, the hard thing is to figure out what you don't know, or to open up yourself to the prospect that you may not know something that you think you do know. And that's easier to do with specific skills. It's much harder to do when we're talking about this idea of leadership. Do you know how to speak Spanish? Can you write PHP code? Do you know how to install a tile backsplash? Now, those are all very specific skills that you either know or you don't. And when I ask those questions in your head, you immediately, instantly, you are able to give a binary answer to those questions. Yes or no? Can you speak Spanish? Well, okay, sure. Maybe your ability or your inability to do those things has some range of competence. So I live here in Texas, and there's a large Hispanic community, and Spanish speakers are pretty common. I don't speak Spanish, but there are people around here who have some level of proficiency. Maybe they can understand a little bit of Spanish. Can't speak it, can't write it, can't read it, but they may can pick up phrases here and there. I can't do even that. You've got to have a realistic view of your Spanish deficiency, if you have any of it at all, or you have none at all. But the point is, it's still easy for you to determine that, because you know if you know Spanish or not. You know if you know how to install a tile backsplash or not. You know if you can write PHP code or not. I mean, these are very specific skills. Leadership doesn't work like that. Communication doesn't work like that. A lot of other people, interactive kind of skills, they just don't work like that. And that also makes us prone to delusion, because we can think that we're better at it than we really are because, well, there's no binary measurement like speaking Spanish or coding PHP or tiling a backsplash. If you want to learn any of those skills, well, you got to figure out what to do. And it begins with your desire to learn to do some of those things or any of those things. Or it begins with your desire to get better at them if you do have some degree of knowledge, but it's not what you want it to be. Learning presupposes some degree of willingness to know or a willingness to know more. So I can ask people the question, can you lead? Can you communicate? People are likely going to say, yeah. Yeah, of course. More often than not, I'm going to get a binary answer. And more often than not, I'm betting that I'm going to get an affirmative binary answer. The answer is going to be yes. Even non-leaders will tell me they know how to lead. And the poorest communicators will tell me that they're pretty good at it. And this is where the truly great leaders just tower above all the rest. They are busy. They are devoted, working to get better. They're anxious to figure out what they may not know. They want to discover the gaps in their knowledge or skill that they may not have even yet recognized. They're open to the possibility they may not know it all. Great leaders are driven by what they may not have yet figured out because they know that those might be the very things that are getting in their way of being as good as they can be. And so to open up yourself to the notion that you may not have it all figured out, that is the mark of a truly capable learner. And it can even be profitable when it comes to worldviews, to personal philosophies, and some other things that may seem to you at first blush to be intensely personal notions. I mean, for example, my personal philosophy is steeped in the notion of serving others. I'm a huge proponent of leadership through service. My personal view is they can't be disconnected. And through the years, that has caused me some consternation as I have observed some people, their performance being elevated when they were led by a tyrant. And then I have seen other people, their performance slip when they weren't led by a tyrant, but they were led by some compassionate, service-driven leader. This vexes me. This has always vexed me. Well, it doesn't so much anymore, and I'll tell you why. Because I'm not willing to embrace tyranny as a way of leadership, but my willingness to see the gray here, to see the gray scale, has opened up my mind through the last 30 years to the possibility that in some cases, at some level, tyranny or the apparent acts of tyranny, they can work. They absolutely can work. Now, I wasn't willing to just leave it right there. And so I have gone on through the years to wrestle with my own leadership to figure out if there are tactics, strategies, and techniques that are used by the tyrant that I might be able to incorporate into my own leadership whenever I encountered a problem, a person, or a situation where I felt like this might best serve this person right now in this situation. This particular technique and tactic just might work best right now. Well, I'm not changing my view, but I'm embracing what the tyrant can bring to the party. I mean, much of this learning happened for me years ago when my children were still small, and it made sense to me at the time as a father because I could sometimes garner cooperation from my kids with just a very calm, polite ask. But man, there would be other times, it didn't matter how polite, it didn't matter how nice you were to ask, you were going to have to bark. You were going to have to growl to get their attention because it's the same kid, different day, different circumstance. And now, yeah, that real calm, kind of deliberate manner, that doesn't work. No, now you need to show some anger. And I got there, it made all the difference in the world. Well, I learned that it's not just a people issue. It's a circumstance issue. And for me, it was eye-opening to figure out that sometimes, with some people, in some situations, you need to behave one way to solicit the very best performance. On a different day, in a different circumstance, with that same person, I might have to behave completely differently to get their best. Now, does that mean that I'm fake? No. It means that I do what I got to do to help them in that moment. So when my kids were being rebellious and obstinate, I needed to growl. I needed to bark a little bit. Maybe I even needed to raise my voice a little bit. But on other days where they were very compliant, no need for that. No need for that. That's viewing the gray. It's viewing the gray. I had to learn to behave differently to get the very best out of people. And instead of viewing that as their problem, I saw it as my opportunity. I saw it as my challenge. Your people can learn too. I want you to think about it. You're the leader. your organization or your team, they mirror you. You set the tone. You set the culture for your team. In most cases, your people, they're going to behave like you do. They'll repeat the stories you tell. They'll talk like you talk. They'll use the same verbiage that you use. They'll begin to think like you do. Now, you may not recognize it, but I promise you the signs are evident. And your resistance to embrace gray will become their resistance as well. And because you're the boss, you have an impact. Now, some of your influence is simply because, well, you have the power and you have the authority. It's not because you have their respect. But don't fight it. Don't squander it. I want you to use it to your benefit, to the benefit of the organization, because if you do it right, you'll gain their respect. You'll earn their respect. And as a result, your leadership will soar. Growth and improvement, growth and improvement. Those are the goals. Don't urge your people to improve without showing them that you're committed to your own. There's no fairness in that. For you to stand up and tell your staff that they must get better, they must produce more, and you're not? Where's the truth in that? Where's the honesty and integrity in that? No, commit to be better yourself. Get better all the time and let people in on it. Confess, admit your weaknesses. Tell people what you're trying to shore up. Apologize to people where you honestly should. Don't be stoic about going about your business in this very binary way. Not if you want to become more effective. Not if you want to be a more powerful leader. No, embrace the gray so that you can give yourself and your team the opportunity to keep on growing. Listen, it's all about getting closer to the truth. I'll tease you a little bit for the next episode, episode 280. Getting closer to the truth in any area will make you more effective. And that's the whole point of evidence-based leadership, to move you closer to the truth. Why? Well, so you can make the very best decisions possible. I continue to preach the message of your role as a leader, and that is to solve problems and to make the best decisions possible. But there is another aspect. There is a third aspect to your leadership, and that is to help your team do their very best work. And together, those three things, those are the legs on the stool upon which you sit. A, to solve problems. B, to make sound decisions. And C, to execute the work. And quite a few leaders, I guess the world calls them managers, we lead people, we manage processes, we manage work. But quite a few leaders, they'll neglect getting to the truth in any of these areas of solving problems, of making sound decisions, or executing the work, and it hampers their leadership. It destroys their leadership. And as a result, their solutions, they're not as good as they should be. Their decisions, they're not either. And even stellar execution, I mean, what would it be? Stellar execution of a poor plan? What is that going to get you? Poor results. The problems that you face right now as a leader, they deserve the very best solutions possible. Hole up in your office, accept no input from others, think it through all by yourself, and approach a solution like you would a coin flip, heads or tails, binary. Your choice is this or that. No other options. No room for another, or maybe yet another. Question, what if you could have more information? This is where you got to visit the website, hirehumanperformance.com. Plug in the number 279. There is about a 5-minute video, and I'll tell you what this video is. This video is about, it's about five commercials that were done between 2005 and 2007 for AmeriQuest. And the whole ad campaign was, the moniker was, don't judge too quickly. And some of them are really funny. It's really clever advertising. Now, AmeriQuest Mortgage created these TV spots, or had these spots created, to fully illustrate how horrible it can be when we draw the wrong conclusion. Don't judge too quickly. And of course, their big deal as a mortgage company was, we're not going to judge you too quickly. In other words, we're going to give you the mortgage. Now, here's the irony. You ready for the irony? In 2007, AmeriQuest shut down because of unscrupulous lending practices. I mean, they were a major player in the subprime mortgage crisis back in the day. See? Yeah, things aren't always, they're not always as they appear to be. It's funny how that works, isn't it? Yeah, you got to see the spots, though. Just under 5 minutes. It's worth 5 minutes. HigherHumanPerformance.com. Episode 279. Embracing the gray. Taking leadership a step closer toward truth. Man, I can't tell you how glad I am that you are here. As always, the show is brought to you by my company, Bula, B-U-L-A Network, LLC. Bula Network is a boutique executive coaching and consulting firm. You can find out more about me and my work at higherhumanperformance.com. You know what I would love you to do? Leave me a review over at iTunes. And let me tell you how you can easily do that. When you go to the website and you watch that video, right below the video in the footer of the post, you will see a link. You'll see a number of links about how to subscribe to the podcast. But the very last red link that you'll see will say, if you have a chance, please leave me an honest rating and review on iTunes by clicking review on iTunes. Well, if you click that link and you have an iTunes account, it will take you right where you need to be. Now, of course, I'm not stupid. I'm going to ask you to leave me a 5-star review, and I want you to just say glowing things about me. Well, why not? If you're going to go to the trouble to do it, you might as well do a good job of it, right? Yes, execution. That's the name of the game, proper execution of these iTunes reviews. I don't know how many I've got over there. I don't have very many. I need more, so I'm asking. So that's how you can help me. I appreciate your time. I appreciate your attention. My name is Randy Cantrell. You can connect with me via Twitter and social media. All of those icons and links are available at the website, higherhumanperformance.com. Coming to you from Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas, from a space that I call the Yellow Studio.